Hello all, and welcome to another episode of Your One Black Friend. I'm your hostess, Jolie, and let's start the show. So today's episode is going to be a couple of themes. I'm going to talk about the TV show C featuring Jason Momoa. I'm also going to talk about what is real. And I don't mean real in the sense of how it is defined scientifically. I mean real in the sense of our collective understanding of what is real. And the reason why I am explaining things in this way is because I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is an astrophysicist. And when I said, how do we define real? He launched into a very scientific definition of real in the sense of, is it falsifiable or testable in a lab environment? And my response to that is, you know, there are certain things that belong in the category of unknown as opposed to being dismissed as unreal. For example, let's talk about hallucinations. If I had a hallucination, if I saw something that you didn't see, that should actually be more accurate. If I saw something that you couldn't see, you could dismiss what I'm seeing as a hallucination. But that doesn't mean it's a hallucination. That doesn't mean it's something that was just generated in my mind. And his response is, well, actually, in a lab setting, we can scan a brain with a CAT scan and we can see what parts of the brains light up when a person is having a hallucination. And my response to that is absolutely. In a lab setting, you can provoke and invoke a hallucination. But most of the time when people report having hallucinations, they are not connected to CAT scans. So just because something can be done in a lab setting doesn't mean that that's exactly the same thing that is occurring in real time when a person is reporting a hallucination. You don't know because certain things cannot be tested in labs because of the fact that they just tend to happen. For example, like an out-of-body experience. They have been experiments where people try to trigger an OBE. But in a lab setting, it may manifest differently than perhaps in a real life day-to-day setting when you genuinely are afraid for your life and you genuinely think you are going to die and you have a different experience. There's something to be said about this being in the safety of a lab and knowing that you're in a lab and this is just a test. Would that trigger certain parts of your brain as opposed to in a quote-unquote real life setting where you genuinely think you're about to die? And because we cannot accurately test for that, you cannot say that OBEs are not real. You cannot dismiss out-of-body experiences as unreal or as hallucinations because we just don't know. So it's more accurate to put that, and I'm saying this, to put that in a category of unknown. Same thing with the UFO phenomenon. A lot of people have reported sightings. It's now beyond sightings where we're having U.S. Senate discussions, hearings about this, and now they're showing video, quote, evidence of these things sort of moving through the sky. Certain books I've read on UFOs have said that this may be a psychosocial phenomenon in the sense of whatever it is we're witnessing could be something, entities, beings, a phenomenon that might either be related to sort of magnetic fields in the earth and generating these sort of imagery, which is I'm assuming is working with the expectations of a person's mind and projecting these imagery into our reality, which is completely wild, by the way, and should just warrants further investigation if you're going to say that this is something that's actually caused by magnetic fields, which authors like Jacques Vallée has written about. Or is it something else, some sort of entity or some sort of entities or beings that, because we expect to see certain things, have found a way to sort of hijack the capabilities of the human mind, right, to perceive reality in a particular way and sort of imprint itself into the fabric of our reality? Is that something that's happening as well with the UFO phenomenon? And we don't know. Not only do we not know, you cannot test that in a lab because you cannot invoke a UFO or a UAP in a lab setting. So that is unknown. So what I was arguing with my friend is, can we put certain things like a hallucination, instead of dismissing things as hallucinations, can we instead put it in the same category as one would put a UFO, where it may or may not be falsifiable in a lab? I mean, it's almost impossible to test whether or not UFO are real in a lab setting. So can we just keep that in a box of, okay, that's an unknown, we can't test that, but that doesn't mean that it's unreal. Can we do the same thing with hallucinations? Because once again, just because in a lab setting you can poke certain parts of the brain and get a person to see something that isn't there, doesn't mean that it's the brain is generating something that isn't there. I'm thinking of, is it Aldous Huxley? And he wrote about the doors of perception, and he was saying how our reality, the construct of our reality, is formed by our senses, our nervous system, our five senses, right? But the nervous system performs a limiting effect. I'm sure you guys have heard me say this before. The nervous system performs a limiting effect on our perception of reality. It limits us. It's our senses of smell and sight and hearing and all of that. It forms the reality as we've come to understand it. But they're almost confined in a way. It's almost walls in a way that kind of force us to see reality in a particular way. So if you push or you manipulate a brain and that generates, or it appears to quote unquote generate, a hallucination, is the brain actually generating a hallucination because you pushed it in a way? Or are you messing with something, some sort of mechanism that's normally a restricting mechanism? And when you mush the brain in a particular way — mush is a very scientific word — but if you manipulate the brain in a particular way, it allows you to then see something that is there, but your nervous system is actually editing out most of the time. That's something worth considering. I think that we have a very strict construct on what we expect reality to be like. And we put very strong constraints on this is what is real, this is what reality is. And that word is a very strong word that we put a lot of faith in, that maybe we shouldn't. Because a lot of the time, when we're moving through this reality, we're moving with a certain sense of certainty that is unearned. If we lived, right now we live on a planet of highly intelligent Homo sapiens, right? But if we lived on a planet of highly intelligent bees, for example, their perception, their understanding, their science would be completely different, because the central nervous system of a bee varies dramatically from that of a human being. Their senses are different. So the perception of reality, even the perception of color, is vastly different than our own. So their understanding of reality, and we don't know what they're perceiving that we are incapable of perceiving. So their perception of reality is going to vary differently from their own. So their sciences is going to vary different from our own. And that's worth considering. We live in an extremely human-centric version of reality. And we're the trees. We cannot see the forest, and yet we're operating as though we can. You know, I think it's very interesting where with quantum physics, the sort of the smaller and smaller you get, the more reality starts to sort of take on a different feel, right? So things that occur on a macro level do not occur on a quantum level. And then that in that quantum is where things get very strange, and quantum physicists and theoretical physicists get sort of wild. And the same thing happens even with math, right? The more complex mathematics becomes, the more complex reality becomes. And so that's worth respecting. That's worth respecting, and that's worth paying attention to. Okay, so now what does that all have to do with realness? How do I tie that into the purpose of this conversation, of this episode? So what I was writing about was how our perception of everything, reality, is sort of fucked up. And this is what I mean. So first of all, we are told, even in 2024, people, the concept, the idea, the discussion of aliens sort of still causes snickers, right? I was talking to my friend once again, the astrophysicist, and I was talking about the internal monologue and how, well, the conversation basically started where I said, you know, I've given up thinking. And I could hear the phone got silent, and I could kind of hear the wheels kind of spinning. Like, what? Why would you say that, Joe? And I said, no, listen, I think the majority of the things that we think are thinking are just, it's just noise. It's noise and nonsense. And so imagine your brain, or imagine your brain and your body as a phone. You wake up in the morning fully charged, and you've got this app running in the background, and it's just running. It's just running and draining your battery. And it's running and it's saying shit that is not relevant to anything. It's talking about shit that happened in the future, or that rather that happened in the past, that is not relevant to your life now and doesn't really matter because it's gone, it's past. And then it brings up things that could happen in the future when there's a myriad of probable realities, and more than likely the thing that it's generating for you to be anxious about, afraid about, worried about, sad about, mad about, all these sort of negative emotions, more than likely will not happen. And that's running from sunup to sundown in the background. And we very rarely never stop almost to take that app and close out of it and say, you know, shut the fuck up, right? It's one thing to sort of use your mind. It's one thing to say, I have a problem. I'm going to sit here now and I'm going to open up my mind. Using the mind as a computer or as a phone, right? I'm going to open up my mind and I'm going to let it, I want it to solve this problem. Whether or not that problem takes a week to solve or a day to solve, whatever, or a month to solve, I want you to actively use my mental energy to solve this problem. Most of the time, your brain isn't being used, or your mind isn't used to solve problems. Most of the time, without your control, your mind is generating problems. It is out of control, and it is running 24/7 nonstop without any limitations, without any sort of like hindrances. It's just like an app that's draining your battery. So then by the end of the night, by the end of the day, you are completely zonked. You are miserable, you're sad, you're happy, you're depressed, whatever. And you're now being driven to drink, overeat, take drugs, all of this other thing to kind of quiet this thing in the back of your head that's just running. What's the point of that? You know, and you guys have heard me go over and over again, talk about the internal monologue. But if you look around, we're all mad. 90%, if not 99% of people are absolutely, by definition, mad. This is something that very few people want to talk about, but it's common among circles in the field of psychology. People know that there's this thing in the minds of most people called the internal monologue, called intrusive thoughts, whatever you want to call it. And I'm sorry, people who say they don't have an internal monologue are full of shit. I apologize. You do have an internal monologue. It's just you're so identified with it. And there are people that I've worked with who, when I bring up the internal monologue, the first thing they say is, I don't have an internal monologue. There's nothing. And then you start asking them, so what causes you? Do you ever think about the past? Do you ever think about the future? Okay, how did those thoughts come about? Is this something that you're sitting and you're actively thinking about that person who hurt you 20 years ago? Or is this something that just gets interjected into your mind out of nowhere? If you sit with it, you observe it, that's the internal monologue. The problem is you're so identified with it that there's no space between it. You think that that's you. And so the key, particularly in the field of psychology, is you have to let your clients know, listen, create separation. You're not your thoughts. But the next step is, if you're not your thoughts, if these thoughts don't serve you, then what is this? What is this thing that we're calling thoughts? What is this act that we're calling thinking? And as a lot of you have heard, or I should say, as a lot of you have read in the book, So You're Living in a Simulation, I talk about what you think is thinking isn't thinking. You're just listening to a voice in your head talk shit. You cannot, quote unquote, think and listen to an audiobook. You cannot think and listen to what I'm saying right now, which tells me that you, in order for you to, quote unquote, think, you're not actually thinking, you're listening. And then the key is there, why, if your thoughts really are you, and your thoughts really are you generating, why do you have to sit and listen to something that comes from within? If you watch a person and they're having sort of a conversation and they go, I can't think because you're talking, turn that down so I can think. What they're really saying is, turn that down so I can listen to a voice in my head tell me things. You guys have heard me say back and forth, and I have not had a depressive state in a really long time. And part of how I've been able to manage that, I've discussed, I've been very open and honest and forthcoming with you guys on the podcast. You can watch my journey. I have not had a depressive spell in about 6 months. I've done this without the use of medication. It has been me pausing, reflecting, and observing, along with, of course, making dietary changes as I've cataloged throughout the podcast. Please go back and listen to older episodes. But it also, it took me taking a step back and going, wait, what is this thing? because I can sit and be having a good day. And then all of a sudden, there's this voice and it's coming in and it's telling me this happened and this happened and this happened and do this and do that. And what ends up happening is you get sucked into the listening of it. And before you know it, you're drained. What is that thing that's draining you? Right. So the conversation that I had with my friend, it was at the end of the day, he said, okay, well, what do you think it is? And I said, well, you're not going to like it, but I suspect that it may be an interdimensional parasite that has been infected the human race. And he was like, okay, or it could be, you know, the voice of society, this, and I said, yeah, that's a textbook definition, but how does that serve any of us? See, at the end of the day, this is a recurring theme I have, or I hear from people when they say, how can you think about simulation hypothesis and even philosophy? All it does is generate more questions than answers. My response is, I don't want answers, because once you have answers or you think you have the answer, you stop imagining, all right? See, I stop myself. I stop saying the word because it's not thinking. You stop imagining. I don't want answers. The questions are perfectly okay. Open-ended questions are even better. Because even if I provide an answer, I can still kind of coast on the understanding that that's just one possible answer. And it's an answer that I'm going to play with for a little bit. And then if it no longer serves me, I can discard it, but I can still hold on to the question. The questions are more important than answers. So the question is, what is this thing in all of our heads that's driving humanity mad? Because you watch the average person when they're suffering, if they're angry, if they're anxious, if they're upset, if they're worried, it's because they're listening to this thing. And the only answer I could give him at the time that was at least the most fun for me was it's an interdimensional parasite. Tongue in cheek. Maybe it is. You don't know. Why is that so hard to believe? Why is that so hard to conceptualize, by the way? Why does that induce laughter, even if it's an uncomfortable laughter? If in 2023, Congress people can sit and have conversations about UFOs and say, we don't know what this is, you also have to ask yourself, could there be other things in this world that are affecting our species? We don't know what it is. And if you look, that certain madness that the majority of people seem to be operating out of, watch the collective, watch people you care about that you're close to, watch them. You can see it when they zone out and start listening to this thing. You could say, well, that's just the voice of society. You can label it however you want. You can say that that's the left brain. I've read, you know, and I've talked about the untethered soul, whatever it is you want to say. But at the end of the day, it doesn't detract from the fact that collectively, there's something wrong. A lot, if you just watch TV, watch skits. I've seen skits. Somebody has, what's his name? Everett, one of my favorite YouTubers. He put together a skit and he showed like what anxiety is. And so he showed himself sleeping. And then this other thing that was obviously him, but with darkened eyes, like woke him up and was saying like, you left the stove on. That's what we call anxiety. But if you take a step back, it's something, it's a disembodied voice. It's a disembodied hallucination that we all are collectively suffering from, right? So to go back to the definition of hallucination, if I see something and you don't see it, I would be said to have been hallucinating, right? But if we all are collectively hearing something that nobody can see, are we collectively hallucinating, or are we all being influenced by something that is imperceptible to us with our senses or with our sense of sight? We can certainly hear it in our minds or in our heads, but we can't see it. And is something unreal simply because it is unseen, or is the effect of it just as valid? Because I've seen the effect of an internal monologue on most people, and the effect of something that you cannot see is always the same: stress, anxiety, pain, depression, anger. The effect of this thing is consistently the same. I read something today, it said there was an actress in some Star Wars movie who was so nervous about this role. It was on Geek Facts or something like that on Instagram. It doesn't matter. But she was so nervous about the role that she was going to play that her anxiety caused her to have holes in her stomach lining. Her thoughts, her fears, and I'm going to put her in quotes. She was thinking what we label as thinking, what our society has has encouraged us to call thinking, is listening to this voice in her head just assault her with lists of things for her to be afraid of, to be nervous about, of things that could possibly go wrong. She sat down and she listened to it for so long that it caused a physiological reaction in her body and broke down her gastrointestinal lining. Why is this internal monologue never a positive thing? And why is the net effect of its behavior or its manifestation always something destructive? If I talk to the average person and I say, you know, that voice in your head, they know, they oftentimes admit to it sheepishly, but they know what you're talking about. When I suffered from depression, I could go back and review the memories of it. It's me waking up and sitting and I'm listening to something saying, this is wrong and this is what's going to happen and this is what this means. But it's only something that I can hear. You know, what I said to my friend was there's not much that separates the average person from the average person on the streets. The difference between you and the person on the street is that that person has sort of lost the battle against the internal monologue. Or maybe they lost their job. And this is what my friend said, and it's very poignant. This is very true. He said, most people are one paycheck away if they don't have any family support from ending up on the streets. This is true even in the West, amongst quote-unquote successful or whatever word you want to use, capitalistic societies, right? Wealthy nations. Most people are living paycheck to paycheck. And if they miss a paycheck, that cycle breaks and they very quickly either end up in, you know, a home of a family member or on the streets. That's just for your physical well-being because we don't have good safety nets. And so most people are also existing in this semi-permanent state of fight or flight, survival mode switched on, which is where that internal monologue really seems to live and love keeping people in. It thrives keeping you in that space where everything is about fighting and surviving. And somehow our entire civilization seems to be constructed to keep most people in that space. And that reminds me of the cordyceps fungi that hijacks the nervous system of an ant and gets the ant to act against its own best interest and to move itself to a part of a forest where it's more conducive, where the environment is more conducive for the proliferation of the cordyceps fungi than it is of the ant. And then eventually I've talked about this before, but eventually the spores burst out of the head. I think the TV show All of Us is about that, about the same mushroom, I believe, I've not watched it yet, but from people have told me from what I read about it, it's about the more or less the same concept. I have to actually read it. It's just funny that I was like talking about this like years ago before the show came up. And I'm grateful for writers who can take these sort of concepts and put them into fiction to get people to really think and to illustrate these ideas. But I want to take it a step further. And I want you to pause and reflect on what I've been saying. Is there some sort of parasitic entity that benefits on keeping, that has literally reshaped our entire civilization? People always talk about how aliens would have come and terraform our planet. And so focused on physical, like changing our environment, changing the, you know, the atmosphere to make it so that, you know, they can exist in the atmosphere. But I want you to take a step back and go, well, if it's a different kind of, quote, alien, and it has sort of hijacked the mind, and it feeds off of the mind and the energy of the mind, because once again, think of how powerful a mind has to be in order to cause a physiological reaction in your body where you're releasing so much stress, right, that it's breaking down against your will, your body, causing holes in your stomach lining, ulcers. Things of that nature, just from thoughts. That's a mind affecting the thought. That's a mind affecting matter, right? Take that and expand on that. I mean, we have enough information that consistently says that your mind can affect reality. If I was an interdimensional entity that fed some sort of psychic parasite that fed on the energy that is generated by the human mind, I wouldn't need to terraform the physical landscape because I'm not a parasite in the physical realm. I'm a mental parasite. So I feed on sort of mental energy. So I would terraform more the society. I would create a society that keeps people in a particular state, in a particular environment where they are continuously stressed. And I can keep kind of coming in there and keep them stressed, because it's an environment, that stressed environment is what I'm feeding on. And so you can terraform a society itself. It doesn't have to be a terraformation of, like, you know, blocking the sky and cloud cover and things like that. Like, you can actually terraform a collective, like a mind space, because that's where it thrives. If it's a psychic parasite, it wouldn't need to affect the world in the sense of, like, you know, blotting out the sun, that kind of thing. It would affect the way we live, high stress. It would affect even how we treat each other, because that space is where it thrives the most. I really need you to think about that, right? It's a wild having these conversations, but I've found over and over again, I tend to talk about things about 5 years ahead, about 3 to 5 years ahead. And for better or worse, I'm sure this conversation will be relevant in about 5 years. It just sounds really wild right now. And that's okay. It's nature of the beast, so to speak. So to go back to interdimensional energetic parasites terraforming not our physical location, but our collective mind space, the hive mind, and how we, and keeping people in the sense, and tying it back to sort of a person that we would call a mad person on the street. The difference between a regular human being and a mad person is that they're both hearing voices. I'll say that again. The difference, well, there's not too much of a real difference between a person who you would consider mad on the street, that's, quote, talking to yourself, and the average person. They're both hearing voices. It's just one person has lost that battle, and that's how they end up on the street. It's the same thing as I was saying. Some people are one missed paycheck away from ending up on the street. So they just stay in that cycle. But it's just one paycheck. It's a string of circumstance. That's it. It's a fine line. Eckhart Tolle talked about this in his book, The New Earth. He chronicled the same thing. You know, he was dealing with a voice in his head. He ended up in a situation. He saw a mad person on the street. He went to the bathroom and he was talking. He realized he was talking to himself out loud. More importantly, this thing in his head was talking to him and he was responding back. And he stopped and took a step back and was like, that's not okay. Have you ever caught yourself talking to yourself? Have you ever been sitting in a situation where the internal monologue is going so hard that you go, stop, out loud, stop it. And then you take a step back and you kind of shake and you look around and hope nobody saw that because you're afraid. Except this is most people, and it's a spectrum of, quote, sanity or insanity. That's why I always grapple with that word. It's just there's some people who are just on a different end of that spectrum of whatever this thing is. I'm going to keep talking about it until it becomes mainstream. Because every time I talk about this, I get messages, I get comments, I get emails of people saying I grapple with the same thing. I just don't know who to talk to about. And the thing is, if we're collectively dealing with a problem that very few people are vocalizing, how does it get solved? Shine the light on it. But there is a certain level, if we're going to say that those people are mad who hear voices, then we're also mad because we hear voices that we have to listen to. And that internal monologue is what's responsible for 99% of the pain and suffering that we see on this planet. Something's happening. Something's happening. Something has happened. Now, to tie it back to the TV show C, it's a great show. Just almost finished. I think on the last episode. I am on the last episode. It features Jason Momoa. And I don't know who the other people are on it. I just know that Jason Momoa is on there. And he's fantastic. It's set in once again, a dystopian future where humanity has lost its sense of sight. So people, all humanity, for the most part, like 99.9% of the populace is blind. But then there are a few people who end up being born with sight. And as a result of said sight, they are called and considered witches and are burned, hunted down, and killed. And anyone who houses a person or protects a person who can see is likewise hunted down and killed. And I think that was it's a fascinating bit of fiction because it causes you to think. So once again, in the conversation I had with my friend, I said to him, okay, let's go back to the concept of hallucination. I see something, you don't see it. And that is essentially a hallucination, correct? And he said, yes. And I said, okay. So to go back to the show C, imagine that these people did not have a connection to the past. They had no knowledge because in the show, there were books. So they were still able to sort of find artifacts of the past. And they kind of knew that at some time in the past, humanity could see. But imagine all of that was wiped out. There was no connection to the past. So they just didn't know that the ability to see was something that is actually inherent to a human race, to the human species. They had eyes with no pupil due to some sort of genetic mutation, okay? And they just accepted that being blind was a natural being, way of being human, that was normal. So being without sight, imagine a world where being without sight was considered normal. So 7.5 billion humans, all blind, give or take, let's say 100,000 people with sight. But those 100,000 people with sight are either persecuted, hunted down, put in homes, put in institutions, or essentially hide their abilities because in the society, if you have said ability, you are challenging, your existence is a challenge to the status quo because it's a world that's constructed for the blind. They have written, you know, laws, they have an understanding, their physics, their understanding of reality is that it's a world without light. They don't even understand the concept of light because they cannot see. So then if you come through into such a world with the ability to see, you would be demonized. You would be ostracized. There's something wrong with you. Why? What is this thing called sight? And so they and their perception of reality, for example, as they would go to describe the sun, they would say that the sun was this source of great warmth, for example. Right? But they wouldn't understand things like we understand, like photosynthesis, morning. They wouldn't have words like that, really. And the perception of the seasons would be different as well. Right? But then if you show up with your sight and you go, hey, actually, it's just a ball of gas. And it's not only does it give off heat, but it's actually supposed to be yellow. It's white now. Okay. Anyway, and that's what it does. They say, no, you're hallucinating. There's something wrong with your eyes. Is there something wrong with that person's eyes who can clearly see the sun? They have the ability to see the sun. Or is there something wrong with the collective? And the conversation drifted into what I basically called, it's a tyranny of democracy. In the sense of, when you live in a world where the majority rules, then the majority rules. And so anything that is exceptional gets demonized, right? You're a minority, so you suffer. I said, imagine a world where the ability to paint is seen as a sort of madness. Because, as you guys know, I create these faces for the most part that I paint. I'm pulling them out of my mind and I'm putting them on canvas. You could make an argument that they are a type of hallucination because I'm generating people that don't actually exist in our reality, but I can see them. Thankfully, in this reality, artists are, for the most part, at least after they're dead, celebrated and appreciated. But could there exist a reality where this would be seen as a kind of madness? What is she painting? What is she doing? People like this don't exist. People like that don't wear that. Like, what is that? And that's a madness. Being able to see things that other people cannot see, that would be considered a madness. Writing fiction would be considered a madness because other people cannot do it. And so the thing is it okay? Is it right that because other people can't do a thing, then that thing is now wrong? I'll say that again. Is that okay? This tyranny of, well, the majority of people can't see this thing. It's not testable according to our definition based on what our capabilities are. And so if things don't fall into this box that we have drawn up to say that this is how things should be, then it's wrong, or it's an illness, or it's madness, when we're all mad here. I'm not saying that people don't actually hallucinate. I'm just saying that maybe we should look beyond what that word is, hallucinate. Because if we are bound by our five senses, but then there are people out there who aren't, and they can perceive things, do you dismiss them, especially if they otherwise seem sane? Because, for example, a lot of fiction is a type of madness by definition, right? But that has become our entertainment. The average fictional story is insane, right? It's a constructing a reality that doesn't exist, and then we sell that story. And thankfully, once again, we live in a society that on some level, while it demonizes hallucinations, we also still celebrate hallucinations, so long as you put that hallucination on paper and you call it fiction. And that's fascinating to me. If I say, sometimes I see things, to the average person, that's a very good way to get yourself locked up. But if I write and say, I want to tell you a story of a woman who sometimes sees things, and then I write my entire life experience, I don't see things, but you see, and I have to say that because I don't want to get locked up. I genuinely don't see things, but I write my entire life experience and I call it a story, then that's celebrated. And I find that there's a bit of tyranny there, because I feel like if you cannot tell a good story, if you cannot tell your life experience in a fiction or in a way that makes people laugh or in a way that is entertaining, then you would be considered mad. Do you understand how strange that is? This sort of weird dichotomy that we exist in this reality. It's funny to me. I was talking to my friend. I said I was going to do stand-up. And he said, what would you talk about? Because I guess he doesn't think I'm funny. I'm fucking hilarious. I'm kidding, Matt. No, he knows I'm funny. But he was like, what would that go? And I said, I would talk about simulation hypothesis. And I would talk about things like I'm talking to you about, in the sense of the tyranny of the majority. It's just, how can I deliver the message into a person's mind that disarms them? And that's the beauty of comedy, is that a lot of the times these guys are saying the truth, but they make you laugh. So the information gets put into your brain, but it's done in a way that it's almost like a fiction, so you can laugh at it. It's like taking the medicine with a bit of sweet. And you could at least, you're allowing people to discard it. It's just a joke, right? But oftentimes the truth is said in jest, because that's unfortunately the only way in which a lot of people can accept truth. And so I enjoy nonfiction, you guys have heard me say, but now more and more I look for truths in the jokes, in the fictions, in the lies. Because I feel like we do live in a society where many who can see beyond the confines of the five senses have put their truths. I'll say that again. It is in fiction where the many who can see in the land of the blind, that is where they have been forced to hide their truth. And I get it. I'm not challenging that. I understand the necessity of it. For our society to function, you know, we do have to sort of operate with this illusion of not only competency, but also absolute truths. And we need the laws, so to speak. At least that's what we're told. We've not tried anything different. But you certainly cannot have just wild, you know, idea. So that's why we have the spaces for the artists and the podcasts and the fiction. But you do need a certain level of structure, I suppose. Just for our day-to-day existence, which is another kind of tyranny, I think, the tyranny of DNA. DNA just needs society to exist as a structure so that it can propagate itself. And so most people get up, you know, they're born, they wake up, they go to school, they work, they have babies, they pass on DNA to the next generation, and then they peak and then they die. So that's the tyranny of DNA. You just exist to procreate. And so most people are kind of not doing more than that. And it's in the sort of outskirts where those who could see are looking around and going, there's got to be more than this. There is more than this. But they can't say it directly. So they put it in books and they put it in fiction and they put it in stories and they put it in narratives and they put it in jokes. Because that's the only way you can really tell people things and they can hear it. And I don't know why that's fascinating to me yet, but it is. And I'll leave you guys with that. Thanks for listening.